So I'm going to talk about facial expression recognition by computer. I'm going to tell you about the CERT system that Judy was referring to in her talk. And I'm going to describe some research opportunities that this system has enabled at the center, both in terms of basic research and translational research. Okay. So the Computer Expression Recognition Toolbox, or CERT, is a system that was developed in our lab, me in collaboration with Javier Movian, Gwen Littlewort, and some very good students. And it recognizes six basic emotions, as well as individual facial muscle movements from the facial action coding system. So that's Paul Ekman's system for describing facial expressions in terms of 46 component muscle movements. So, and I know many of you have seen a demo of this, but I am going to show just the briefest demo to for those of you who haven't seen it. I will just show this first, which is this is what the output looks like. You saw this slide a minute ago. But basically what we have are frame-by-frame bar graphs and the pointer. Okay, thank you. So what you have is a frame-by-frame bar graph of the amount of a given facial movement in each frame of video. So this looks like EEG, essentially. We've got 40 dimensions, actually, or 30 to 40 dimensions, depending on what version we're running, and a 30 hertz signal, 30 hertz noisy signal about what the face is doing. But it does run in real time, and it enables us to do a lot of things for that reason. Okay, so I'll just show you a couple of quick facial actions. I'll direct your attention to the smile detector over here, and then I'll smile, drop, smile, and it's picking up information about dynamics. I'll do a fast smile and a slow smile. Okay, and there are many other facial actions there, so maybe I'll just show you one if this one will work. I'll show you these two together. I'll do a frown. What's that? Okay. I wanted it to work, Gary. Okay. 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 So there's a clear signal and it's also a noisy signal, and that's the kind of data that we have to work with. Okay, so the first project that I'll talk about is one with Jim Tanaka and Bob Schultz, and it's using this system for an intervention in facial expression production for children with autism. The project also addresses basic research questions having to do with sensory motor learning and plasticity in the facial expression system. So a brief history of this project. This is a good center story in that this project originated from the first All Hands meeting. I gave a demo of CERT. Jim talked about the Let's Face It program, which I'll describe briefly in a moment. And we realized that we should put the two together. So the Let's Face It program is an intervention system for children with autism that trains face processing skills, primarily face recognition and also some facial expression skills. And they showed, Jim, along with Bob Schultz, showed that certain face processing skills improved after 20 hours of interaction with the intervention computer games that they developed. So the goal was to add facial expression production to this intervention system by including CERT in the system. So just to review quickly some things that we know about both the perception and production of facial expressions in kids with autism. On the perception side, there are deficits in facial expression recognition, also deficits in processing complex dynamic stimuli, moving stimuli, including real-time facial expressions, but also other kinds of dynamic stimuli. There are also atypical physiological responses to presentation of images of facial expressions as stimuli. So skin conductance is attenuated. fMRI responses are atypical in this group, particularly for some of the negative emotions, such as fear. On the production side, there is much, much less data, but there are some things that are known. There's a lot of evidence that kids with autism have reduced expressivity. There's also a study showing that their spontaneous mimicry when asked to mimic certain mouth movements is impaired. I gave you the third one first, that imitation of certain mouth movements is impaired. There's also reduced spontaneous mimicry, and that was a study by McIntosh and also Piotr Winkelmann here at UCSD, showing that when you present an image of a facial expression to children with autism, their automatic mimicry response is much less than typically developing kids. There is one study by Sapinski and Bryson that looked more particularly at facial expression production using a coding system that's similar to FACS, and this was on spontaneous expressions. And they did show things like reduced movement in the mouth and eye region versus the brow. And it had to do with frequency. They were weaker, briefer duration. And there was also a higher occurrence of atypical movements, such as asymmetries, raising one eyebrow, or unusual combinations. But there really wasn't information about dynamics. None of these studies has information on dynamics. So the goal of the study is primarily to provide training and feedback on facial expression production to children with autism. But one of the first things we need to do is characterize more clearly what differences there are in facial expression production in this population, both in its post its expressions, spontaneous expressions, and are there differences in the dynamics of any of these production systems. And then we'll develop intervention games involving production and ask the question, does production improve with training? Now, this gets to a very important question, which is, can training deliberate facial movements influence spontaneous facial expressions? Now, training deliberate movements is still adaptive and important. It's an important part of communication. However, it would be very good if this system was also somehow able to tap into the spontaneous expression production system. There is a very large body of evidence showing that there are two pathways for facial expression production. There's a cortical pathway that starts in the primary motor area that is associated with posed expressions, whereas a subcortical system originating in the region of the basal ganglia and amygdala motor area that is associated with spontaneous expressions. So can practice with posed influence spontaneous? Well, the answer is maybe, because there is some evidence of interdependence between these two systems. So for example, there are a lot of facial feedback studies showing that voluntary facial movements elicit feelings of those emotional states. So by moving your face, you can essentially kickstart the spontaneous emotion and spontaneous expression system. Also, voluntary expressions have been shown to elicit specific physiological responses, autonomic nervous system responses, and EEG responses associated with those emotional states. So, and this gives rise to some more interesting questions, some of which maybe we want to ask first in this project, and that's one of the things that I want to talk about later with some of the collaborators on this project. But here's one question. So we know that there are reduced physiological responses to expression perception. Well, how about physiological responses to expression production? This was a question I think that was originally asked by Jim, and also Bob was interested in this. Now, if these physiological responses to production are intact, then if you train, if we give an intervention task that trains deliberate mimicry, so we have kids with autism deliberately learning to mimic facial expressions, will physiological responses to expression perception emerge? So if we just show them a face, will they start to get these physiological responses? And if they do, might this have ultimately an impact on understanding emotion in others? They see a face, after training they start to get the physiological responses, suddenly their understanding of what that person is experiencing is different from what it used to be. Okay, and a second line of question is whether expression recognition could be improved by practice with production. So there is a line of inquiry or interest in the neuroscience literature about relation between motor production and mirroring, and that these may be integral to development of perception and recognition skills. So if we show an expression, label the expression, have them make the expression, if you see one and do one, can you recognize them better later than if you just see one? And related, Does training and production alter activity in research in regions associated with perception in fMRI studies? And that is something that we may consider putting in the renewal or making part of a future project. So in support of the role of facial feedback in the expression perception or recognition side of things, there's an experiment by Lindsay Overman showing that biting a pen can impair recognition of emotional expressions. And also blocking activity of the face region of the right somatosensory cortex by TMS impairs discrimination of facial expressions, but not a matched identity task. So, and then one more example that I'd like to show you is that, so these questions get at the role of mimicking and mirroring responses in face perception. So this is an example showing mirroring responses. I was on CNN originally. So this project is in the relatively early stages, but I will show some progress that we've made on this project. One is a development of facial expression production intervention games. So this one is by Jim's group at UVictoria, the Smile Maze. I think a lot of you have seen Smile Maze, and I just have a video of it. The idea is that when your token hits it's like Pac-Man, and when you get to a smiley face, you've got to smile in order to get through. There we are. So here you smile. Okay, and similarly for Angry Maze, and we're very soon going to integrate other emotions in tasks like this. There are also related tasks that are being developed in our lab and Bob Schultz's lab. So I'm going to skip this for time go to some preliminary data that Jim got on some typically developing individuals. I believe they were college students. But showing that after playing Smile Maze, heart rate and skin conductance changes go in the expected directions, although this is just a trend with this small number of subjects. But there were stronger effects with the self-reportive affect, where after playing Happy Maze, positive affect goes up and negative affect goes down, whereas after playing Angry Maze, positive affect goes down and negative affect goes up. Okay, and then we've also been developing, this is in collaboration with Judy Riley, and you just saw many examples of this, a facial expression production task battery. So this is a battery of expression tasks so that we can measure facial expressions pre and post intervention. These include posed, mimicked, and spontaneous expressions, where the spontaneous are listed in a number of different ways, which Judy described. And here I have a pilot autistic subject, we do have permission to show this one, doing the task with posed, mimicked, and spontaneous expressions. Here we show happy and scared. But the real question is, well, how does this compare with typically developing children? So we realized early on in the project that we needed to collect a sizable database of facial expression production in typically developing kids in order to understand when a response is or is not typical and when it has improved to get any understanding of that whatsoever. And so that's one of the, one of my major interests in the collaboration with the Riley Lab is to be, to collect a database like this and score it with, code it with CERT so that we would automatically have that kind of a measure. And so you guys saw these example expressions here already. And this is what the CERT data look like. So this is for posed joy. The child is read a vignette such as David gives a present with a big bow to Jonathan. Jonathan is very happy. Show me what you look like when you're happy. And so the CERT data, the CERT results are coming out in the direction that it expected with some of these facial expressions. So here with joy, this is a histogram showing the percent of subjects giving each response. And subjects, so subjects are moving their zygomatic and they're contracting their orbicularis oculi. Those are shown in blue, and also some movements here that are often seen with spontaneous expressions of joy. Lid tighten and lips part are also shown, and we have a little intrusion of eye widen with that. So this is an example, but basically the goal here is to characterize probability distribution for typical kids so that we can do something like take a child from a particular population and compute the Mahalanobis distance, let's say, between their high-dimensional expression vector and what the typical kids do with some information about their variability and covariances. So this is an example of information about dynamics that we get with CERT. Again, Judy, I think I showed this actual graph, but here we have a subject listening to the vignette. Billy is watching TV. His brother Mark walks over and turns off the TV. Billy is angry. Show me what you look like when you're angry. And so we've got information about the dynamics. This is now the anger detector here. But we've also got dynamics of a spontaneous expression of anger, that child showed anger while listening to the vignette as well as after being asked to pose it. So this is the kind of information that we're getting with CERT. We want to code these dynamics. The data is just coming in. This is another example that I'm throwing in here from another study, but just to show the kinds of information that we can get about dynamics with CERT. So this is real pain and faked pain. And here we've got now three facial actions during a faked pain example and three facial actions during a real pain example. Real pain was immersion of the arm in ice water. And here we have a much shorter duration, more ballistic movement of the facial actions, whereas here we have a longer duration and a stepped onset and offset. We're also looking, as Judy said, at facial expression production during problem solving. And I just wanted to show you this example that Judy showed you, Elon, for manual annotation of face video. We've also set up CERT so that it can be combined with Elon so that you can look at the facial expression output at the same time as you have the manual codes. So this is just, I don't think you'll be able to hear it. It's that same one that you can't hear. But the point of this is just to illustrate that now we have down at the bottom manual codes, transcription, and at the top we're showing the output of two of the CERT channels at the same time. So this is the kinds of things that, kinds of data analysis that we can now do. These are some CERT results during problem solving, during the mystery box task. That's the task where the child is given an object and they have to recognize it under the table. And so, and it's collapsed across 12 subjects, and the latency time, which is the time between the handoff and the response, has now been normalized. So this is Gwen's graph, and she just took an average for some of the facial actions across this normalized latency time. And we have two negative facial actions, the corrugator, brow furrow, and a chin raise. And these are going down on average during that latency period. And a positive facial action, the zygomatic, is going up during that latency period. However, these averages, time warped averages, don't tell the whole story. So another thing that we're doing is we're looking at the dynamics. And one way to do that is with a phase plot. So I'll look at this one first. Here we just have for one subject, the start of the latency period, they're handed the object, The brow furrow, a negative action, or it's, well, it's not, it's concentration among other things. Brow furrow is actually greater than zero, it's relatively high. And then there's a rapid state transition that takes about a tenth of a second where brow furrow is dropped and eye widen goes up, and then the subject gives a response. Similarly, for these two facial actions, this is a zygomatic smile, and this is against the eye contraction, action unit 6, which you can't see, but so here at the start of the trial, we have both zygomatic and action unit 6 lower, then same subject, abrupt transition, and these positive actions increase. So it's a very clear state separation. And we're looking at, for example, whether there are differences between the younger children and the older children in the separation and the clarity of these states. Okay, I think I got that point across. I'll just say that we do the same thing with yaw angle. So so the state transition is also marked by looking forward and then a rapid transition to look towards the experimenter when about to respond. So lastly, do I still have 5 minutes? So hopefully. Lastly, I'm gonna briefly describe another project of the study, yeah? Okay. Looking at coupling of facial expressions in dyadic interaction. And in particular, so this was a project by Adrian Moore and Paul Ruvolo, and also involving these faculty, Andrea, Javier, myself, and Gwen. And involves observation of another's pain. So again, the pain is cold water immersion. And what we found was that facial coupling, as measured by CERT, predicts the ability to detect fake pain. So I'll show you an example. These particular videos were collected by Kong Lee. I'll show some real pain and fake pain examples. Decide for yourself which one is real and which one is fake. They're about 10 seconds, one at a time. If I can get it to play, I'll try one more time. Yeah. Okay, there's one. It's not playing, try again. Okay, so decide for yourself whether you thought it was the left or the right. I won't make you raise your hand. So the real pain was on the left, the fake was on the right. So undergrads, when showed these videos, the experiments typically you don't get to see both examples from one subject side by side. You're just shown one at a time. But naive subjects are at or near chance for these kinds of tasks. So, but there's variability, and that is what this study looked at. So what this study did was it has an observer looking at stimulus subjects in three conditions. So the video might be neutral with immersion in warm water, real pain or faked pain. Again, these two are warm water and this one is ice water. 30-second clips, subject responds real, fake, or neutral after each response. Okay, and then we look at the correlation. Here's the correlation. Here's the zygomatic output for the stimulus subject and for the viewer, and we look at the correlation of those CERT signals. Okay, I have a couple of examples of what mimicking behavior looks like in this study. Try to double click. Come on. Oh, don't get to see it. I don't think we need to go through that. Okay. Come on, there we are. I copied this from Paul, and I didn't realize it does all this. Very cool. Okay. All right. So what we have we're measuring facial coupling by looking at the correlation of the signals between viewer and cold pressure, which means a stimulus subject. And so we end up for each observer with a vector of these correlations. Okay, and so here we'll show three of these in sequence, so three of those in sequence, and then at the end we end up with this vector. And the idea is that our model for predicting the ability to tell real from fake is just going to be a regression over this vector of correlations. It's very simple. Okay. And what we find is that these correlations predict the ability to detect faked pain at correlation levels of about 0.86. What's that? Really? Okay, good. Okay. And it seems that this correlation is driven largely by mimicry behaviors to real pain. So it appears that good deception catchers are mimicking real pain expressions, and they're not mimicking the faked pain expressions. We're still doing some more analysis to confirm that this is true, but here's an example of some of the things we looked at. So mimicry, which is actually different from coupling. Before, with the coupling, I allowed correlations to be positive or negative. So here with mimicry, we're just gonna force correlations between the facial behavior to be positive and truncate everything else to zero. There were some other constraints on here too, and so mimicry to the real pain is positively correlated. Mimicry to fake pain is flat, although I want to look at the negative correlations to see if people are actually negatively having negative responses, such as smiling when someone is wincing, when they think someone is faking it. So, and that might also be partly behind that correlation. So, in summary, the analysis of coupling behaviors in this deception detection study addresses the role of mirroring behaviors in understanding the states of others. Understanding the states of the others is a crucial skill that has a major impact on success in life, and it is unknown to what degree this skill is learned or can be trained. And there actually is some evidence out there that this skill is related to learning. So, for example, people who grow up in abusive households are much better at detecting deception from nonverbal behavior than people who grow up in supportive households. So there is some evidence that there's a learning component to this. The autism study at the beginning of the talk begins to address whether these kinds of skills can be learned, such as through training with facial expression mirroring. And I also want to mention that we do have another research effort at the center that looks at facial expression coupling in more directly in a teaching context. So this looks at mirroring behaviors as well as a number of other nonverbal behaviors during a tutoring session, and addresses its impact on learning. So, and then specifically with respect to CERT, automated facial expression recognition enables research into facial behavior that was previously not feasible. Simply due to the time involved for manual coding, particularly coding dynamics is very difficult to do manually. Also, the facial EMG is an option, but facial EMG requires application of electrodes to the face, which can influence facial behavior. It also has low spatial resolution, so it's difficult to differentiate some facial movements. So this automated system enables development of translational learning systems, particularly because it does work in real time. I described an intervention for autism. There's also been progress that was presented at a previous all-hands meeting for adaptive intelligent tutoring systems. That's work by Jake Whitehill and Javier Movillon. And also this system facilitates basic research, and this research includes characterizing facial expressions and dynamics, expressions of emotion, expressions during problem solving, comparing clinical populations, and also measuring coupling of facial expression and dyadic interactions. So that's all.
Yeah, in the study where you're reading the little vignettes and then asking them to say show with their face how they would feel, my understanding was that was to try to get a baseline of normally developing children's behavior so that you could compare it to children with autism?
Yeah, that's a primary goal, yeah.
So when you go into children with autism, you can't read those vignettes because their language impairment is just as bad, if not worse, than their social interaction and facial stuff. So Were you intending to have the same task or what?
That is an important point. And first of all, I will say that the intervention is going to be designed for high-functioning kids, but still that there is the point that their language functioning is impaired relative to typically developing kids. So I think we will need to probably develop some more very nonverbal production tasks to go along with it.
Yeah, years ago, we did a study with children with SLI, and Judy, I think maybe you were even involved in this, where we just asked them to show us with their face. We had a set phrase, I'm going to the park, you know, or I'm going to, you know, well, I'm going to the park's fine. And they had to show us with their face how they would be if they were happy, sad, or mad about that, and they were actually better than control children, but if they had to say it with their voice, just the same sentence in a happy, sad, or angry voice, they couldn't do it at all. So they couldn't control the emotion in their voice. They couldn't perceive the emotion acoustically from other people, but they were better than normally developing kids in the visual domain, both for perception and production of emotion.
And these were language-impaired kids?
These were kids with SLI. So we had a paper on that, but it was like in the 80s.
I think I remember.
Okay. Thank you, Marnie.